Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And we're joined by Phil Conlon, a CIUT veteran, of course, has a great show, Classical Undergrounds, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Phil follows everything that moves. How are you doing, Phil?
Yes, good evening, Phil. And I'm doing fine. And I try to follow everything that moves. That's true.
You're staying in, staying sharp, following the orders.
There we go.
This is, of course, a holiday period, and it gives us an opportunity to reflect a little bit on the stories we've been doing and to try to pinpoint the ones that we think that should deserve the most attention. In my view, the one we somewhat neglected in past recent weeks is what is developing around Ukraine, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, President Biden, and on the other hand, the President of Russia, Mr. Putin, and because people should never be complacent and assume that everything always ends happily. There's much confusion about what is at stake when you have a leadership in Ukraine that is trying to involve and in NATO in the and a matter that actually is an internal issue to Ukraine. The pretense is, it's a Russian issue. Not a Russian issue. And Phil, I guess you've been following, so you probably have some sense of this. You recall on the Taylor Report, we started with this matter of how all this unfolded and has been unfolding. It is very important to review it, but to highlight it, why it's important. I mentioned it on December the 21st, the Globe and Mail had a story, which is just to show you how dangerous and bizarre the situation is. The previous president, Mr. Poroshenko, who is a rabid anti-Russian element and also rabidly pro-NATO, he's been cultivating NATO. He came here not long ago, to Canada, where, of course, we have our most famous Ukrainian patriot, Chrystia Freeland. Ukraine is way up on her list of the most important issues in the whole world. So the Canadian government likes to mention that. They like to mention how much they know about the issue. And we actually have troops. There are at least 200 Canadian soldiers serving in Ukraine. They always say they're there as training people, you know. And that's actually, you know, the soldiers in that region know a lot about soldiering. They don't need any. It's all just a little show. In order to say Canadians are there, which means that we are susceptible to a misstep by someone in which Canadians could be involved. But going back to Poroshenko, he's being accused of treason by the current president, the comedian by profession. What's his name? Zelensky. Is that it? Zelensky?
Zelensky, yes, something like that.
Phil Conlon.
He is a comedian. We should emphasize for our listeners that he made his living by telling jokes in supper clubs before he became the president.
He was the pretend president, right? Yeah. And they liked his pretend presidency so much they made him the real president. And then they said, "How do we end up with a comedian?" This is, you know, we're in that area where people have trouble separating movie stars and theater people and et cetera from real people. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've known actors, performers who people come up on the street and want to beat them up because they play villains. But anyhow, in this case, he played a comedian. I have to say the Taylor Report was somewhat hopeful when he was elected, because if you recall, Phil, he was elected as a peace candidate. That actually is how he beat Poroshenko. Poroshenko portrayed himself as the war candidate. And he went around wearing, as they all do now, camo. I mean, you can't be a coach in the National Football League if you don't wear a camo. And pretty soon, I swear, we're going to see cheerleaders in camo. So Poroshenko was going around in camo and menacing the Russians and glaring at them and actually provoking them. He sent ships into areas they didn't belong, and they were picked up like tin cans out of the water. And he looked around and everybody said, now what? And they did, now nothing. So that's why Mr. Zelensky came along saying, well, why don't we, you know, try a different tack? But this is a curious thing about the, we call this, people use the language of deep state. What startles people is that if someone could be like Zelensky, elected as the peace candidate, and Poroshenko being defeated as the war candidate, getting, I think, 10% is where, that was Poroshenko numbers, 10%. And now, after how many years it's been, Mr. Zelensky is accusing Mr. Poroshenko of treason and of collaborating and passing money to the pro-Russia elements in the Donetsk, or the south, I'm going to say southeast Ukraine, so I don't get, find myself mispronouncing things and causing Zelensky levels of laughter. But this, the reason I raise all of this is to say Canada should get the hell out of Ukraine. That we would find ourselves with Zelensky calling Poroshenko a traitor and undermining the safety and security of Ukraine vis-a-vis Russia. That should tell you that this is time to tippy-toe out the toward the West, maybe go out through Hungary. Hungarians can't stand the Ukrainians, so that you could go in there easily. They would say, we told you. At any rate, so that's the situation. And let's remind everybody that, Taylor Report does its part in trying to fight disinformation. If I read the Globe, they say they are. So I'm telling them, no, we're doing it. You're not. And one of the ways I could point out that they have made this issue, try to make it a Russian issue. The problem of the frontier between those two southeastern states of Ukraine, which you could say, I mean, if you're using ordinary pedestrian political parlance, they certainly regard Russia as a friendly country. They are themselves largely Russian speakers, and they are to the east of the Dnieper River. Incidentally, Phil, you traveled in those regions, haven't you? Have you ever been to that area?
No, I didn't get that far, but I did travel as far as, I got to the Black Sea. I was in Bulgaria and Romania, and that's, of course, that was socialist Bulgaria and socialist Romania and socialist Yugoslavia. And I have to tell you that, you can be raised with all of this hatred of the communist world in the States. But after 1 week in that part of the world, I thought, this is wonderful. These are wonderful people. These are wonderful places, you know? And it's like, what was I learning in school, right?
Well, the Globe, you don't have the eyes of the Globe and Mail.
I didn't see through the eyes of the Globe and Mail.
Have the eyes of Phil Condon. That's the problem. See, eyes don't count.
Yeah, well, the Globe doesn't give me a platform, unfortunately, to tell people that. But what is interesting is how many people are now popping up in those countries, young and old. They say it's just the old. They say, oh, these old Russians can't adjust, you know, so they still have nostalgia from the Soviet Union. But that's not the case. It's a lot of young people. I've made a wonderful Facebook friend who's 18 years old in Slovakia, who writes the most wonderful stuff about their socialist history. And I got to tell you that people in that part of the world realize they've been had. You know, they were led down the garden path, and they would like to not be where they are, right? And I think that that's true in Ukraine too. You know.
It's also that not only are they it's not just the generational issue. Everybody wants to always play that card if they can, but in fact, these are ancient political issues. I was among the things the Globe said that were false was that they said Russian troops are massing. That is actually sort of a World War I, pre-World War I buildup language. The Russians are not massing on the Ukrainian border. They have, I think, they're about 300 meters away, but you know, they're in their own country. The border, that's the border. And I agree with the Russian spokesperson who said, well, if you want to know why this is such an issue, look at a map. Do you have Ukrainian political leaders, of course, being egged on by NATO, asking for more and more weaponry, more and more personnel, commitment from the so-called West to come in or to, you know, buttress them? And this is something which when the lines have to be drawn between great powers who are weaponized, and they have to have modalities, and they have to have understandings. For example, if you have a missile that can reach Moscow in an hour, and then you move it into a place like Ukraine, and the time it comes down to 15 minutes, they say to you, you have to stop now. Because, you know, that's furtive and dangerous conduct. And the U.S. has been engaging in very dangerous conduct towards the Russians for a long time. But in terms of what the crisis is about that could be resolved, it has to do with the way power was gained by the people they always call the oligarchs. Mr. Poroshenko was one of them. Remember, he has $1 billion in chocolates. He's Mr. Chocolate.
He was the chocolate king.
He's the king of chocolates.
Yeah.
And so, but that isn't the most important king, although it sounds pretty important to me. I'm partial to chocolate. But they were behind a coup. And we talked about it on the Taylor Report at the time in 2014. I believe it was in the fall or early winter that it was over the New Year, wasn't it? The Victoria Nuland of the United States, Senator John McCain, all types of major American political figures showed up in Ukraine when they were protesting a president that they, and not the Ukrainian people, one political element, but they were in the famous square in Kyiv. And the American media turned that into, you know, you were supposed to get the impression that every Ukrainian was there. No, they weren't. They were actually east of the Dnieper River is a population which has been largely pro-Russian throughout its history, whole history. You know, I'm talking pre-Tolstoy, going all the way back. And therefore, you can't run around this fact. You have a difference of opinion about how the country should go. And the sitting president that was the target of the demonstrations agreed, after meeting the legal opposition to his presidency, those and not people who had more votes than he had. He was the president, but they said he had to go because he wasn't willing to make a trade agreement. Let's talk about facts. Trade agreement with the West Europeans that would be injurious to the trade agreements that, that Ukraine had also with Russia. And then the Westerners wanted they wanted like what you call a, what is it, a leverage takeover. They wanted the whole thing. And those who wanted the whole thing were anti-Russian and anti-Eastern Ukraine. So the president met that opposition, and they agreed that there would be, he would, in order to stabilize the country and to make it a democracy, a functioning democracy, he would agree to step down earlier than the term, than there was, he only had about six, by the way, about 6 months to go. And he said he would do that. He would step down early and there would be new elections, and all the people, all the parties to these discussions would then field candidates and have a contest. So he stepped down. Now, remember that meeting where he agreed to help the process by stepping down was attended also by representatives from Europe. There was representatives from Poland there. The Polish representative made a very remarkable statement at the time. He said, this is the best thing that could happen. It's the safest thing, and anybody who doesn't maintain it and make it successful is going to be, it's going to be hell to pay, was roughly the way he put it. Well, it turned out it was NATO that and their friends. What happened was he did step down. However, they had by that time seized, I should say this, I get my timing right. He was prepared to step down in like a matter of weeks, and they had set a date. But the Kiev crowd saw this, the right-wing crowd, the pro-NATO guys, saw this as an opportunity to seize power. And so they took over violently in Kiev, and there were elements in the army collaborated, and by the way, elements who did not. The president had to flee the country. And then they said, well, we've had a revolution. Yeah, but you know, you had an agreement, but they tore that agreement up. And therefore, in southeastern Ukraine, the elements there, who by the way had been, of course, the partisans of the serving president who was going to step down, but was driven out bloodily with blood, they said, well, hey, you guys don't have the right to form a government. You didn't do this democratically. And they said, oh yeah, no, we're gonna just go ahead and run everything. And therefore you have a division inside the country. Next stage, so then you start having people like Poroshenko and others saying, okay, we're gonna march into the southeastern Ukraine. And of course, the people of Southeast Ukraine, they were prepared to defend themselves. Now, the Globe, the New York Times, Washington Post, everybody else has misreported this as though they say, oh, that was the Russians' idea. No, it wasn't the Russians' idea. It was the people of Southeast Ukraine, which is not a small piece of real estate, by the way. It's also very, very rich in minerals, and it has a famous, it's known for its mining. So then you had violence initiated from Kyiv by a segment of Ukrainian society who wanted to assert themselves and to turn it into Ukrainian nationalism versus Russia. And so they made speaking Russia like a Russian, like a crime. They took all kinds of steps to make everything worse. And as it got worse, meetings were held. And again, Phil, this is a consensus. They brought in international parties to help bring about, and forgive me for not knowing the name of the group, but it's there if anybody wants to look it up. And they said, okay, This has to be resolved, and it will be resolved democratically, peacefully, in the following manner. It'll have these elements. One of the first and most important elements was that those who had seized power in Kyiv would speak directly to the political leaders of Southeast Ukraine. Here's where the fly in the ointment is. And this is where we have to point, and people in Canada should say loudly, get out of Ukraine. If Kyiv is not going to play by the agreed process, which guarantees a peaceful result and a democratic result, get the troops out of there. Because Poroshenko and Zelensky have twisted the story, twisted it by saying, we have to talk to Russia. Well, the Russians say, no, you don't talk to us. You have to talk to the political leaders of the Donetsk and the other region, part of the region. It says so. That way you agree to it. So, but today, late 2021, Biden and Germany and others are saying, oh, this has got to be resolved. We have to talk to the Russians. No, you don't have to talk to the Russians. The Russians have said clearly, what they are saying clearly is written down clearly as the mode by which you will achieve peace. And that was agreed to by, yes, you guys, Poroshenko, yes, you, Zelensky, your governments are the ones who said they would talk directly. And if they did, Phil, you know what they would have to talk about? Language rights, freedom of the political parties to function and not be subject to arrest and violence from fascists, because you remember the labor union headquarters in Southeast Ukraine, which was burned.
That was in Odessa, and that was a
murder.
Terrible crime. It was a mass murder scene, which has never been investigated by the Ukrainian authorities and is never commented upon by any Western journalists.
And that was the stealthy hand of the Kyiv group and showing who they really are. They don't respect their fellow Ukrainians. If you did, you'd say, we're not going to molest you at all. We're going to talk to you, and we will agree to protect your culture, your religion. By the way, religion is a huge factor now in this. It's rarely talked about as to which Orthodox you are. And of course, culture, language is very, very important. So we have to get those things straight. Get it straight. The talk has to occur between Kyiv and Southeast and the leaders of the Southeastern Ukraine, who have clear demands and who were promised there would be talks. Failing that, Canada should get out. Actually, I should say, they need to get out now so that foreign elements, military elements, aren't around to color the discussion. Anytime armed personnel from a foreign country are present, there's always a danger of somebody manipulating the situation. You're listening, by the way, to the Taylor Report. And let's get this right. Poroshenko and Zelensky are, through their madcap behavior, are showing why Canada should have nothing, zero, to do with this thing, other than to say that the agreements made by the parties following the illegal coup in 2014, have to be respected. And lastly, I'll say another place that the Globe likes to misstate things is that they say, of course, a big factor, big feature is that Crimea must be returned. It was, they said, annexed. It was not annexed. That's a lie. it was not annexed. Crimea, they also, of course, they have never been identified with the people west of the Dnieper River. And in Crimea, they had a plebiscite, which was called by the leaders of Crimea. They were not Russians. They weren't Russian agents. They weren't Russian soldiers. The political leadership in Crimea immediately said they wanted to be part of Russia. And given the fact that there had been an illegal seizure of power in Kiev, they exercised a plebiscite in which they called upon Russia to make them part of Russia. And following that, it did happen. I remember watching President Obama talking about, oh, the annexation. He said, oh, it was terrible. That was criminal. They have to give it back. And someone said to him, the people's rights were taken away. And someone said, well, they had a plebiscite. They had a referendum on joining Russia. You know, what was the desire of the people of Crimea? And Obama said, there was no plebiscite in Kosovo, and you had no problem with Kosovo becoming part of Albania. And Obama said, well, there was a plebiscite. And reporters later said, he's mistaken. There was no plebiscite. To my knowledge, never has been. You want to understand the Crimea? I'd tell you, read Tolstoy. Here's your chance. It's winter. It's Christmas time and holiday season. Read Tolstoy's Sevastopol. Tolstoy was a soldier at Sevastopol. And it's one of the grimmest books I ever read. It's a short read, basically, but it's written by a young Russian army officer, writing like a reporter. But he fought against the French and the British and the Turks. Interesting combination. All these years later, you say, oh, look who's interested in Crimea. Of course, by the way, I recommend read all of Tolstoy. You got a month in the winter. We have COVID. Go ahead and read all of Tolstoy. But his book, Sevastopol, would be a good place to start. This is the Taylor Report and other matters on this. I'm making up a kind of a slogan for the new year, and I'm working on, and we'll talk about this and some more here as we go along. But I'm going to take a look. And first is to remove Canadian soldiers from Ukraine. And the next one would be condemn the Saudis and the US and the UK for now stepping up the war in Yemen. Saudi Arabia invaded Yemen, attacked Yemen, bombed Yemen. Yemen doesn't have an air force. Saudi Arabia is the richest monarchy, pure, absolute, no playing around parliament monarchy. And it attacked a wealthy country, and it attacked the poorest country, Yemen. And the poorest country is doing very well in the war. And President Biden was elected saying, I don't like the Saudis. I don't like the fact that they took a Washington Post reporter and sliced him into small pieces and threw him in the Turkish sewer. That did seem like not the way to treat a reporter. He said he was going to get tough on him. It didn't happen. Right now, the bombs are falling. The bombs are falling. And this should be brought to a close. And again, we have to talk about this curious thing in deep state, because Biden came in saying, I'm going to end that war. And now the war is, because the Saudis are losing, they're starting to increase the volume of raw violence through having an air force with the capacity, thanks to the UK and the US, the capacity to destroy civilians who don't have proper air cover. But they do have fighting spirit, and they are beginning to move into almost all region of Yemen. And actually, they're talking about going to Saudi Arabia, which I wouldn't blame them. When you've been aggressed against, you have the right to strike back. Another slogan we're going to work on, and we'll do it a little later in the show, is the U.S. has got to get out of Syria, and Canada's got to stop lying about what's going on in Syria. Canada was part of the U.S. terror campaign to try to remove the government of Syria. It's a sovereign government. They provided weapons and dirty ones to people trying to overthrow the Syrian government. And the U.S. has a base in northeast Syria and one on the Jordan border. And that base in the northeast, that was another one that they all said, oh, we're going to leave. Actually, it was Trump said he was going to leave. And then he's the one who left. And the U.S. military stays. So this is the Tater Report. It is CIUT. You can still contribute to the end of December. Go to CIUT.fm, donate. You could mention Tater Report, by the way, if and when you do that. And Phil and I will be back in a few moments.